I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Food USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com. Or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining Unfiltered on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your co-host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, with Brian DeMarco.
Hello, hello.
Hello. And what's today? It's the 17th of May.
It's another rainy Tuesday here in New York.
Another rainy Tuesday.
I can't believe we barely made it to Brooklyn. I don't know what's going on today, but the traffic is brutal.
Brutal. Yeah. So we're starting 10 minutes late. Excuse us.
But for all you podcasters, you won't know the difference.
Right. Exactly.
So Aaron, I have a little news story, but I do want to hear your Manhattan Cocktail Classic story, because you know what? You were there, and I know that a lot of my friends went, and I could not go.
Sadly, I actually did not make it to the gala on Friday night. Yeah. I bowed out, gave my ticket to somebody else who really wanted to go and had just moved to New York, and I thought it would be a really cool experience for her to go do that. So
I had forever heard from her again. I mean, is she now?
She is a good friend of my colleague Suzanne, who was doing a nice table with Giants, sparkling wine from France, and they were making a little cocktail with absinthe, so dressing up in green and white, and they had a great time. It's a fantastic event. I saw the pictures. Today's, I believe, the last day of it. So there's been seminars and different events.
So that's a shout out for the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. Where is that located?
The gala was on Friday night at the New York Public Library. And since then, there's been seminars at Astor Center and events weekly, nightly, I think all throughout the night at different venues across New York. So... Tonight, Tanqueray is doing a little event, but this is a trade event, so, you know, not needing to wet the whistle because everyone get excited and
Don't worry. Tonight we have a better event, which we'll talk about later.
Okay, excellent.
I do have a little news, though. It's funny, one of my colleagues threw a Wine Spectator in front of me today, and I see that James Lauby had written an article about Napa Valley and sort of the legacy of Robert Mondavi, which is a sad, sad story about his project was called Copia. And basically it was a $70 million museum / all things wine Napa project that he had built and sort of unfortunately died when he passed away in terms of its ability to get off the ground. And it wasn't for lack of trying. And I know that the project started in 2001, just after 9/11, and took many years to get through. And now they're calling it the white elephant of Napa, and it's basically unused. And,
oh, dear.
So, I mean, it's pretty sad. And I don't know what this means for Napa Valley, but, you know, there's the three big towns that do all the tourism, which is, you know, Yountville, San Helena, and Calistoga. But, you know, apparently Napa Valley itself is a fairly blue-collar and kind of rustic town. It's really sort of a working town. And when was the last time you were up there, Aaron?
Last year, actually, yeah. I had never really noticed that it was...
But you were probably in the three big towns.
I was, yeah. But overall, so what is this actual article referencing?
Well, it just talks about, it's, you know, there was this cultural American Center for Food and Wine and Arts, and it's now completely abandoned. And the legacy of Robert Mondavi is kind of, you know, while we all know him as this, you know, legendary winemaker, there is sort of this sadness about that each Napa Valley resident, I think, is on the hook. For I think there's 135,000 residents there, and they're each paying their taxes to keep this thing afloat.
Oh, really?
And it's sort of this.
Probably will t- turn into an educational center again at some point. Maybe Ferran Adrià can take his lab from Spain and do a little pop-up over at the this one here. You never know.
Well, anyway, a lot of other small businesses had popped up around there thinking this was going to be a major tourist attraction. So hopefully we can do a shout-out for our friends in Napa and hope that this thing stays alive.
Definitely. Absolutely. And for our listeners, that's in is that this month's Wine Spectator?
This is the Wine Spectator with Napa, A City Reborn, on the cover.
Okay.
So, anyway, we have a very special guest with us today.
Yep.
She of course, is not only a friend, but a colleague, and represents the Man O' War Winery out of Waiheke Island, New Zealand.
Waiheke Island, just love that.
So I want to introduce Miss Bronwyn Skews, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, Waiheke, not Waikiki, Waiheke.
Yeah. not Hawaii.
A lot further away than Hawaii. 18 hours flight, in fact, from New York. So
it's what?
18 hours flight.
Oh, wow. 18 hours, yeah. And you've been here for a couple weeks now, just doing the U.S. tour and really stationed in New York. So it's, I imagine, been a fruitful sort of a couple weeks for you.
Yeah, always spend a lot of time in New York and love New York. It's a gorgeous city.
Mm-hmm.
And the wine and food industry is thriving. So
it is thriving.
It's good to be back, and I'll be back in the fall. So
yeah.
Off to Chicago on Sunday.
Okay.
So Bronwyn, tell us a little bit about the project and how you're involved with Man O' War, and then explain a little bit about the winery and why it's so special.
Yeah, well, Waiheke Island, we're actually an island. We're the third island in New Zealand. It's not just the North Island and the South Island, but there's Waiheke Island. We're a 25-minute ferry ride from downtown Auckland, capital city in New Zealand, on the North Island. I suppose you could describe it as a mini Hamptons, a holiday destination for nice. Aucklanders, mini Hamptons for New Yorkers. A lot of people have holiday homes over there. We call them batches. So it's 25-minute commute. It's very, very close. Beautiful beaches. There's 23 wineries on the island. We're the largest family-owned estate-grown winery.
And how many acres we talked about this, didn't we? You're always going back to that hectare-acre conversion.
The island's about 25,000 acres. We own 4,500 acres, so quite large land percentage. We don't just grow vines. We farm sheep and cattle. We have olive groves and produce award-winning olive oil, in fact, and also make honey.
Nice.
But we have 150 acres under vine, and we grow everything from Sauvignon Blanc through to Bordeaux, Syrah, Pinot Gris. We've got some wines here to try today. But the beauty of our eastern end of the island is that we're 80% surrounded in water. So we're able, because of the cooling coastal breezes, able to grow everything from Sauvignon Blanc right through to Bordeaux blends, which it's rare that you can grow so many different varietals on one piece of land.
So just for clarification, we had this discussion this morning, actually. The island is surrounded 100% by water.
Yeah.
Your property is surrounded 80% by water because you're some inland, right?
Yeah, we're at the eastern end of the island, and we're 80%. We've got two neighbours, too. There's a lot of large landholders at the other eastern end of the island. The ferry comes into the western side of the island, and that's the populated part. But 80% surrounded in water and vineyards from sea level to 1,000 feet. So
is the population of the sheep higher than the population of humans on this island?
Yes, probably. There are more vines in New Zealand, though, than there are sheep. That's a fact.
Yeah.
So sheep is number two.
Yeah, sheep's number two now. I think it was number one for a while there. But it's a gorgeous property. There's so many different... We have a soil profile that's unique to anywhere in the world called Stony Batter Loam, and it's a mixture of scoria and clay. It's most clay is stacked horizontally. This is stacked vertically. It's like gravel, very free draining. That's what is unique about the eastern end of the island. Yeah.
Well, I pick up in your wines all the time the sort of smoky minerality that comes through. I know we talked about this last week when we were tasting, and you'd also mentioned that there was some volcanic components in the soil as well.
Yeah. The Greater Auckland region, there's many, many volcanoes, all inactive, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of volcanic topsoil, a lot of volcanic ash, a lot of massive big volcanic boulders, on especially the eastern end of the island.
Okay.
So great volcanic influence, as well as that coastal influence, yes.
So Bronwyn, I know that you guys obviously do some classic references like Sauvignon Blanc. Tell me about all the varietals that you're growing over there and which ones seem to thrive.
Yeah, well, the island's renowned for Bordeaux blends and Syrah. Bordeaux blends, Kim Goldwater was the pioneer of Waiheke Island and planted the first Bordeaux varietals there. But at Manawar, we've been, because of the many aspects and soil profiles and little microclimates, we've experimented a little bit with the varietals. We were the only ones that had planted Sauvignon Blanc on Waiheke. There's a few other wineries doing it now. They always said it was too warm on Waiheke Island.
Really? Okay.
Marlborough, which is what a lot of people would have tried, Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, is in the South Island. It's been the Southern Hemisphere. It's a lot colder down there. It's a lot warmer on Waiheke. So it's it's a different style. It's more of a restrained style. That was a second thought for us with launching in countries like the US to plant Sauvignon Blanc. It was an easy foot in the door.
Yeah.
But we grow Pinot Gris. That's another whole story, which I'll talk about later. Chardonnay grows incredibly well on Waiheke. And then we have all the five Bordeaux varietals. We plant Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Malbec, Petit Verdot, and Cabernet Sauvignon. And also Syrah does very, very well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So your oldest vines then for Manawar were what?
Our Chardonnay were planted deep in the valleys on iron-rich clay soils, and they were planted in 93. It's New World, obviously New Zealand, so the industry's, you know, sort of 40 years old, 50
doesn't
years old.
The name of one of your vineyards is Ironclad, and that's, you know, is that because of the iron in the soil? And it's also a play on words for some of the warships. So
Well, the name Manawar, there's a lot of history involved with our property, and the name Manawar dates back to 1769 when Captain James Cook was circumnavigating New Zealand, and he anchored off Manawar Bay, on our property, now called Manawar Bay, and he noted the native trees on the shoreline, and they're a very tall, straight, magnificent tree called a kauri tree, spelled K-A-U-R-I, and noted at the time they'll be great as masts or spars in the Manawar battleships for the British Royal Navy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Later they came back and turned that eastern end of the island into a wood and water station, and Manawar kauris were used as masts in the Manawar battleships. So later the name Manawar was bestowed on that bay, and our farm is now Manawar.
It's on that bay.
So it's
a great story.
Neat stories.
And then you have the Valhalla, you have the Ironclad, you have what other specialty blends do you have?
So the Ironclad would be our flagship, and that's a Bordeaux blend, and all of our Bordeaux varietals are planted deep in the valleys on iron-rich clay soils. So Ironclad is also the name. We don't put our varietals on the front of the bottle, only on the back. And the Ironclad were the 19th century battleships, the wooden ships with the big ironclads on their hulls to make them battle-worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our Dreadnought Syrah, which is 100% Syrah, planted in very, very extreme sites. Matt Allen, our vineyard manager, chose those sites because Syrah, being such a vigorous variety, he wanted it to focus its vigour in getting the roots deep down into the soil, mm-hmm. and concentration into the fruit rather than growing excess leaf. So they're right on the edge of cliffs, and if you look at our website, in the gallery, you can see how extreme. I mean, we'd arguably have the steepest vineyards in New Zealand.
Oh, really?
So we haven't gone down the east. A lot of New Zealand's vineyards have been very flat.
Mm-hmm.
But on Waiheke, not just us, many other Waiheke vineyards have challenged that. So,
in blind tastings, do you find that people who are tasting these have a difficult time placing them from New Zealand?
It's funny you ask that. Our Syrah, for instance, our Dreadnought Syrah, it's been in many blind tastings in the US, and in fact it was in one recently, and and quite a few masses of wine and masses of sommeliers, and it was a blind tasting, so couldn't believe it was from New Zealand. They thought it was very northern Rhone.
I was going to say I think I remember having that Syrah last year and it having this sort of really meaty and rustic Saint and Joseph, earthy. Yeah, exactly.
It's a gorgeous wine. Mm-hmm. It really is.
But so, even this Pinot Gris that we have in our glasses now, it seems to be, you know, aromatic and something from, you know, northern France or Alsace or something
Alsatian mm-hmm, style, mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The Pinot Gris, the great story of the Pinot Gris is we don't do things easily at Man O' War. Man O' War Bay has very, very large tides, so you can only get in and out of Man O' War Bay where our winery is.
So, hey, Bronwyn, you know what? I want to save that story for our tasting. So I'm going to let Jad take us to commercial.
Am I talking too much?
No, you're doing just fine. you're running that second story into my break. So here we're going to do. We're going to come right back, and we're going to taste Man O' War wines with Bronwyn. And she's going to tell us a great story about how they harvest the wines. We'll be right back.
This is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at noon, Dave Arnold, the author of CookingIssues.com, will discuss new and innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients. Call in with your own questions to see if Dave and the crew can solve your cooking issues. Again, that's Tuesdays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Unfiltered on the Heritage Radio Network. And if I'm not mistaken, Jack, is that a Boys to Men remix? I don't know. This has been the week of the 90s in terms of a music flashback. So.
It's Bryn Mawr. He's a local producer here from Brooklyn.
Nice. Yeah. Take me back to sixth grade. I have to give a little shout out to Chris Cross and Boys to Men in that regard.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm feeling so, you know, Southie right now. I can't handle this. You know.
So we're here with our fantastic guest today, Bronwyn Skuse of Man O' War Vineyard in...
The lovely and talented Bronwyn.
Yes.
So what do we have today, Bronwyn, to taste? Aaron's like chomping at the bit to get a glass poured here. Let's see what's...
So thirsty. Always thirsty. So again, for our listeners who are just joining us, Bronwyn is from Waiheke Island and oversees Man O' War Vineyard, and they have a whole lineup of different varieties that have been planted now since the 90s. And we've started with the Pinot Gris, and I think if you'd like to mention anything about that, we started talking a little bit about its qualities and its sort of smoky minerality and akin to the aromatics of an Alsatian Pinot Gris.
Yeah, well, the 2009 Pinot Gris we're trying here today, this is the only grape that we grow wholly on Ponui Island. And Ponui Island, spelled P-O-N-U-I, is an island just off Waiheke Island, which is where most of our grapes are grown and where our winery is. Waiheke Island, for those listeners that have just joined us, is just off Auckland City on the North Island of New Zealand. Ponui Island is owned by a couple of local farmers and also us. So we grow all of our Pinot Gris there. It's a bit of a nightmare because our winery being on Waiheke Island at Manawa Bay, has very high and low tide, so we can only get in and out on a boat to Manawa Bay at high tide. So we've got to plan things very carefully. Mm-hmm. We load up a barge at high tide. A barge at high tide with 40 bins that hold a ton of grapes. And our pickers and our trucks, and we tow it over to Ponui Island and pick like mad men and women all day, and then we can only get back into Manawa Bay and get the grapes to the winery at high tide. Wow. So it's about an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the weather, to get the barge over to Ponui Island.
How many days of picking does it take to get the whole harvest?
Look, I think it's about 6 days all up. I could be wrong. I think it's about 6 days all up, yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
So it's essentially like doing a massive, you know, movement of men and materials and machinery 6 days in a row to try to pick all your fruit before.
Proof is in the bottle of that hard work, huh?
Yes,
yeah,
indeed,
that's right.
Indeed.
It is a good drop. In fact, our 2010, which I haven't quite released here yet, got just picked up top Pinot Gris, top medium style Pinot Gris in New Zealand. So,
excellent.
Pretty happy about that.
Cheers to that. Yeah.
Right, that's like the winning the award is the tallest midget at a. I'm sorry, what?
Where did he come from?
No, exactly. No, this is quite fabulous. I think there's some smoky notes to it, as you talked about. And, you know, I think there's some freshness, though, that, you know, would probably remind me of a Marlborough Savvy. But this has got so much more mid-palate and depth of character. And so...
Sorry, I haven't poured you. You're on the Sauvignon Blanc still, aren't you?
Oh, really?
We're on the Pinot Gris now.
We're still hung up on the Pinot. She's still pretty.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'll wait for the reds then. Forget it.
Yeah, so we've got the Sauvignon Blanc here today, and that's we're the most northern winery, I would say, in New Zealand growing Sauvignon Blanc. So it's a very, very restrained style in comparison to Marlborough, where it's a lot colder. The Pinot Gris, there is a bit of Pinot Gris grown on Waiheke. There's a couple other people growing it. Chardonnay we've got here today. There's quite a bit of Chardonnay growing on Waiheke Island. It grows very, very well. Our oldest vines are Chardonnay vines, planted deep in the valleys on iron-rich clay soils. And then we've also got a Bordeaux blend here today, which is a blend of Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Malbec, and Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's I'm looking forward to having a glass of that with some of that gorgeous pizza I keep hearing about.
Oh.
Here at the restaurant.
So is your winery considered a sustainable or biodynamic or organic? And you want to explain how you classify that?
Yeah, well, we are... At Manor War, everything is hand-picked, everything is dry-growing, and we are 100% sustainable. So we try to do everything properly over at Manor War. We're registered with Sustainability New Zealand. You go through an auditing process, both the winery and the vineyard. So we try to do all we can at Manor War. It's tough. Our property is so large that it can take 40 minutes to get from one side of the property to the other.
Being in your climate in the eastern end, what are some of the biggest climactic factors that you have to consider in terms of weather?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, Auckland can get quite humid. We're very, very lucky at the eastern end. We have the coastal influence, so humidity and powdery mildew is not as rife as it is at other parts of the island or Greater Auckland. So we're very, very lucky. We do get it at times, but and that's the thing, we have to check the vineyards on a daily basis, which is tough when you've got 76 individual vineyard sites 40 minutes apart.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can only get there by four-wheel drive, so it makes it tough. But Matt Allen, our vineyard manager, does a great job, and Duncan McTavish, who is our winemaker, who's got a wealth of experience, they work as a great team, and he's out in the vineyard.
Is he a native Kiwi, Duncan?
He's a native Kiwi.
He is.
He's done vintages. The beauty of New Zealand is winemakers can work the opposite vintage in France or America. So he's made wine in the Moselle, Burgundy, Oregon, Napa. Mm-hmm. He's made wine all over the world. So we're very lucky to have him. He worked with Pegasus Bay in New Zealand for a while. In fact, a couple of our wines, I just found out this morning, we've got a gold for our 09 Valhalla Chardonnay, which is our reserve, and our 09 Dreadnought Syrah, which we've just released our 09 Chardonnay here, but the Dreadnought we'll be releasing in a few months. Gold at the International Wine Challenge.
Excellent.
Which is a pretty massive accolade. So
absolutely.
Duncan and Matt are bringing together the, are making the music, if you like.
Sure, yeah. You're celebrating on another continent, but I'm sure there'll be a little...
So what's our next wine, Bronwyn?
So the next wine, we'll try the Chardonnay next.
While we're pouring this, I would love for our local listeners... for you to do you know where we can find this wine locally? Maybe we can have one of our side guests, Mr. Chris, here give us a heads up. Where can we find this wine locally, sir?
Well, this evening, you can find this wine at Tribeca Terroir in the city.
It's actually the East Village Terroir, but...
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. You can try them all there, even the award-winning selections tonight, and that'll be from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Excellent. So, for folks who are interested in Man of War, and we have a tasting tonight at... The East Village Tribeca. Oh, hello.
Ooh, dear.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God. Oh, my.
Terroir.
East Village. And our host, Paul Greco, will be there, I'm sure, to chide me for screwing up his enunciation. But it's 11 o'clock to 1 a.m., and that's for our late night psalm friends and all the people who want to go out and have some interesting wines from Waiheke Island. So we're on the Chardonnay now. Bronwyn, tell me what you think. This is this the Valhalla or is this the?
No, this is the white label Chardonnay. Oh. All the white label range. That's our Man of War range, and it's a great by the glass wines. You'll see these wines at many restaurants by the glass. It's more of an affordable range. The black label is considered our reserve, I suppose, or our iconic range. The Chardonnay is, we've got a little bit more clay in our soil now and still got that volcanic topsoil. I need to have a sip. I'm going to have a cough in a sec. Hang on. I love this wine too. Very Chablis, like beautiful
it is,
acid.
Yeah.
Great
nice
minerality.
Richness, but just sort of more of an oily richness as opposed to a really full oak sort of richness, you know?
Mm. Yeah, this has had a bit of barrel fermentation. So old French oak, just 30% of the juice and then 70 in steel tank. It's done really well, this wine. Highly awarded Parker wine and many other accolades on the other side of the world that aren't so well known here, like Decanter Magazine.
Before our listeners, they know Decanter, and I think this was, you were rated one of the best wineries in Decanter this year. And
We were put forward as Decanter, one of the wineries for Decanter Winery of the Year. So,
excellent, yeah. Good news.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
We had a guest on not too long ago named Eric Arnold from Bottle Notes, and we were talking a bit about.
No, Eric. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're talking a little about New Zealand wine.
Eric's just a shout out. Good friend.
And, I hope he's coming tonight. Actually, I haven't had a time to meet up with him.
I think I'll have to email him after
there
this and there, chide him.
Yeah. Well, we were talking a bit about New Zealand wine just in terms of its growth, because certainly right now the Pinot Noirs are quite hot, as have always been the Sauvignon Blancs, and you bring to the table quite a few other expressions, which I don't think are as common in retail outlets. So what do you see in terms of the growth of New Zealand wine and looking at, your neighbor Australia and how they kind of blew up fast and have been on a little bit of a harder slope in the past couple of years. How do you find New Zealand's sort of trajectory?
Yeah, look, I think Australia's coming back. There are some wonderful Australian wineries.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
It was just unfortunate. There was a lot of cheap stuff coming over here,
yeah.
and devaluing the Australian brand.
Yeah.
I love Australia. I love Australian wineries. It's a bit of a joke, the whole
I think it's definitely exaggerated. Yeah. Oh, in terms of, yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get those accents mixed up and everyone's like, huh.
Oh, no, I don't mind. I lived in Australia for quite a while, and the Aussies are okay.
Uh-huh,
I like
okay.
them a lot. It's more of a sporting little nudge that we have. Cricket
we'll
and
call
rugby.
It Boston Red Sox and Yanks,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing.
It's something that I'm sure is exciting for the industry, for the country in general, to have more recognition for the wines in different categories.
Yeah. I mean, New Zealand's been renowned for its Sauvignon Blanc and definitely the Pinot Noir, but Syrah, there's so much great Syrah coming out of New Zealand at the moment. And Riesling, oh my goodness, we don't produce Riesling, but you get some of the best Rieslings from New Zealand, I have to say. Have you had much exposure?
I have, yeah. Those two in particular, Riesling and Pinot, seemingly have taken a little bit of storm this year in the States. Yeah,
I'm hoping you'll see more Riesling on the shelves from New Zealand. But Chardonnay, New Zealand Chardonnay, wonderful. It's got great acidity.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to be getting it right. And
ages well.
Ages beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And Pinot Gris, you've tried it today. And there's a lot of good Pinot Gris
Very
coming
impressive.
Out of New Zealand too. Marlborough, Waiheke, Hawke's Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And before we run out of time, I want to taste some of the reds
so
we can get into talking about what you believe is some of your finest wines and some of the best blends coming out of New Zealand are Bordeaux blends from Waiheke Island. What are we tasting now, my dear?
We're tasting the white label Merlot. It's a blend. We call it a Bordeaux blend. You'd maybe call it here a Meritage Meritage.
Meritage isn't dropped around so much anymore. I think Bordeaux blend is just fine.
Good. Well, this is 42 of the juices Merlot. 27% is Cabernet Franc. I love Cabernet Franc. 19% is Malbec, which is seeming very popular in the States, I've noticed, popular, in the last few years. And 12% Cabernet Sauvignon. So it's a blend. This is, as I said, out of our 76 vineyard sites, 43 of them are Bordeaux vineyards. And they're all treated as single vineyards right up until blending. So all aged separately. And then Duncan and Matt and the team go down to the cellar and we don't see them until they're happy with the final blend. This white label range, this white label wine is easy drinking. It's got good acidity, which I really like in a red wine.
Nice sort of peppery notes.
Smoky. As I said before, I'm looking forward to
trying. I was going to say, pizza. This is a great pizza wine. And a burger wine. You know, it has a little grip on it and still juiciness.
We do really well with this wine in Australia, actually, because that's another market I work in. And there's quite a few chains, which you don't so much see in New York City, but
they're around.
Steakhouses.
We hide from them.
Steakhouses like Kingsley's and these are in the rock pools of the world, this is a great by the glass wine, found at many of those restaurants because it's great with a steak.
Well, again, folks, we can find these delicious wines tonight. At 11 o'clock, we'll be at Terroir.
In the East Village.
East Village. And that's on 12th Street and 1st Avenue. And that's going to be tonight from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. And if you want to taste some beautiful wines from Waiheke Island and Man O' War Bay, we'll be there. We'll be there with bells on. And the lovely and talented Bromwood Skews will be telling the same story over and over. hopefully with a bit more aplomb and a bit of a buzz.
And there's anywhere online that our listeners can check out to
more information.
Or anything coming up in this new year that you want to share before we close?
Yeah, well, we jump on our website, which is www.manowarvineyards.co.nz. So that's .co.nz. We've got another event, don't we? Chris, we had another event on Thursday night for Brooklynites.
That's right, we do actually. It's going to be at Sheep Station, which is a great little Australian restaurant.
Nice. Jason and who's his partner in crime?
Jason and Martine is the chef and co-owner, and that's on 4th Avenue in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
And what time is that at, Chris?
What time or what night again?
That one goes from 10 until 12, but for those of us that live in Park Slope, that's probably more like from 10 until around 3:30 or 4.
And that's this Thursday night in Park Slope. At Sheep Station.
So Bronwyn's got a nice little docket full before heading to Chicago on Sunday.
That's right. I love it.
She can't say that New York can give her a run for her money.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all these fantastic wines and the story of Man O' War today.
It's a pleasure.
Pleasure to have
pleasure.
You here.
Great to see you again, Erin, and thank you so much.
Perfect. Brian. Well, this wraps up another successfully rambling episode of Unfiltered. And I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, with my co-host, Miss Erin Fitzpatrick. And we bid you adieu.
Adieu. And thank you to Jack Inslee, our engineer and producer.
Happy
once
Jack.
Again. Happy
I'll
Jack.
Have the listeners know that there's no vest on Brian today.
Oh, damn. It's too hot for that.
Yeah, Jack, you're burning me up in here.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scenes Food News for the week of May 11th. One of the most exciting things that I found in my trolling of trade blogs this week was the announcement of a new initiative called AgRE, that's capital A-G, small R-E-E, so it's sort of agriculture and green, I suppose, is the idea behind that. And the co-chairs include Dan Glickman, who is a former secretary of the USDA under Clinton, Gary Hirschberg, who is the president and CEO of Stonyfield Farm, Jim Mosley, who is a former deputy secretary at the USDA under George Bush, and Emmy Simmons, a former assistant administrator for economic growth, agriculture, and trade at the U.S. Agency for International Development. So this is kind of a mixed bag of political viewpoints here, which is what made me really sit up and take notice. It's funded by all the usual suspects like the Gates Foundation, the Ford Foundation, etc. But leading off in their first meeting, Glickman stressed the importance of involving all stakeholders and seeking common ground in addressing the need to feed a growing global population and doing so in ways that are environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. And the eight foundations that are backing AgRE, he notes, agreed to set aside their political differences, as did the individual co-chairs, to develop research-based long-term solutions and strategies. I think this is a gigantic step in the right direction. I'm hoping that these guys will have a huge impact on the Farm Bill, which will be coming up again in 2012. So let's keep an eye on AgRE. If you want to read more about them and what they're doing and their news, they do have a website. It's www.foodandagpolicy.org. This has been Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scene Food News.
The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured smoked boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.